Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
Man, this is a treat. One of my favorite personalities in the world of media, you know, there's always that person that you credit for putting you on to something. I'll just say that, you know, Donnie Simpson, from his days on radio to as the host of Video Soul on BET back in the 80s and 90s, he's always been a hero, always been such a music fan. This was the first night we were meeting him. He couldn't have been cooler. One of the nicest, most genuine music lovers ever. This is August 2nd, 2017. The great Donnie Simpson. Yeah, I'm getting my professional voice on. Questlove Supreme Classic. Donnie Simpson. Ooh la la. Let's go.
Here we go.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Cool Quest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got soul.
Yeah.
But Donnie Simpson cool.
Yeah.
Life goals.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Fonte.
Yeah.
Rocking your world.
Yeah.
When my hair gets dry,
yeah,
I use Donnie Super Curl.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
Black Sugar Ray.
Yeah.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
With a real DJ.
Roll call.
Paid bill,
yeah,
ain't got no problems,
yeah.
Shout out to North Korea,
yeah,
and Dennis Rodman.
Roll call, Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Boss Bill is here,
yeah,
not far from Mars,
yeah,
shot for the moon,
yeah,
still among the stars.
Roll call, Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
It's like,
yeah,
and damn it, I'm hype.
Yeah.
Donnie Simpson in the place. Shut up, he's rocking the mic, right? I hate y'all.
Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Donnie.
Yeah.
They call me Green Eyes.
Yeah.
If I could finish this rap,
yeah,
that would be a surprise.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Yo, you peep out.
Yo, so good.
You
try
to call Audible with Donnie Simpson in the place.
It's the same thing.
Come on, man.
Tell the truth. You're going to say Donnie Simpson's here, right?
No, I said it's written down.
Okay,
Donnie
whatever.
Simpson in the place.
Anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Questlove Supreme. I'm your host, Questlove. We have Team Supreme with us. Lightyear in the place. Sugar Steve.
Is Questlove in the house?
Yeah, Questlove is always in the house. Sugar Steve is here. We got Fontigolo. Unpaid Bill.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm happy to be back.
You've been so quiet the last few. I'm so glad that you're here. And our boss Bill's here as well.
What up?
I will say that every culture needs a pioneer, and our guest today is beyond pioneer. For 30 years, his morning show in WPGC, the Donnie Simpson Morning Show, has trailblazed and done wonders for the culture of soul and R&B. And I guess you could say that he's attained God status in the eyes of all of us in this room for 17 years as the host of Ooh La La, Video Soul, on BET, which practically gave the world its first view of artists like Whitney Houston and Usher. You've done in-depth conversations with greats like Aretha Franklin, anybody from the Purple Camp that I've not seen on any other networks.
Jesse Johnson.
Yes,
and Andre.
Jesse Johnson. I mean, the time, the list goes on and on. And he's just known for his grace, his knowledge of music. I mean, do you imagine that once upon a time there were hosts of radio shows and video shows that actually had knowledge of the music? And
who would have thought, that man?
Yeah, that's
who would have thought.
That's
it's a novel.
That's sadly missed right now. But more than anything, this episode will probably be a masterclass on how to host such. I will sound like an amateur.
This will be my favorite episode.
Please welcome Donnie Simpson to our show.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Questlove. Appreciate you, bro.
Yo, he just said my name. I'm sorry. Of all the episodes, this is probably the one that I will be the most nervous because, I mean, we all grew up with this voice and always imagined the day that we'd have an opportunity. I never thought that my first time sitting with Donnie Simpson would be on
your show,
on my show, not his show.
Oh, well, I'm honored to be here, man. I really am. This is awesome, man. I'm a big fan of yours, bro.
I know it sounds like false modesty whenever I say, like, I can't believe you know I'm alive, but I mean, that's really
oh, for real,
I can't stop smiling.
Mad respect for you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And a lot of people in this room, not all of them, but a lot of them.
He's talking about you, Steve.
Sorry.
No, that's gave you props.
Stir my own heart. What
the heck?
And he shot you down.
So you're actually, I know that we're lucky to have you today because you are going to induct your friends tonight.
I'm not actually inducting them. I'm just there having dinner with them.
Support?
Yeah, I'm just there in support.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I know that no one is a bigger fan of Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and the Time family than
you are.
Even to this day, I still watch your interviews on YouTube with those guys. And
yeah, man. And those are my toughest interviews, too. It's funny because we were boys. You know, we're so close. So my toughest interview, you mentioned Sugar Ray Leonard.
Mm-hmm. What are your friends?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, and Smokey. Like, those
really?
Are my boys. Always the toughest interviews because, you know, you know them so well, and then all of a sudden you're in this formal setting. You know, you got to ask questions, and they're like, why are you asking me that? You know that.
But
you know, it's just weird.
To me, it's like those are your, especially when you did the, I think the Pandemonium interview back in like 1990 with the Time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was the first time where, you know, normally there's a cool demeanor about you, but then, like, I saw you just as the Billy Preston to their Beatles, like the Times Beatles,
where
it was just like, oh,
wow,
Donnie Simpson's just like, he's one of the crew, and that's,
man.
He was on the record.
That's
right.
I'm on the Pandemonium album. Wow. That's right. Well, you know, that's very flattering to say that. And I remember when they got their star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame,
mm-hmm.
they said, man, all day long, all we kept saying was, it's just one person missing, man. Mm. You know, and that just, you know, what an honor. I mean, it wasn't me, it was Billy Preston. But no, but, you know, we're just friends like that. That day that we recorded that show, before we recorded it, Jimmy and Terry set me down at the board in the studio, and they're playing the album for me, the Pandemonium album. So I'm sitting there, and the intro comes on, and, you know, I do the intro.
Right.
I'm doing this intro, and I'm sitting there like, how? Wait, what? Wait, that's my voice. I couldn't figure it out. How they got me to do this introduction that I didn't record. And what happened was that they had lifted it from like 5 or 6 years prior to that. I went to present them, just to introduce them, at the Minneapolis Black Musicians Award show. Mm-hmm. And they lifted it from that and used it as the intro for the album. Man, it was just, what an honor.
Yeah.
to open up for the Time.
That's right, because they briefly, when Morris did Fishnets, I guess they briefly reunited as the Time. Were you actually introducing them back in 87 as a full unit, or were they just going on to get an award?
Oh, wow. In 80, yeah, that was a full unit then. Yeah, that was the time. That was everybody. That was before Fishnet. As a matter of fact, Fishnet was a part of that show that you're talking about, I think. I think we introduced that then.
Yeah, man.
There's a video on YouTube of you in the studio with them, and they were playing the track for Fishnet.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. They were in the studio together.
That was a few years earlier, though.
That song was so hot, man.
Oh, yeah.
So, those that know you well know of your love affair with music, but
yeah,
where did it start? Where did your what was your childhood into as far as your relationship with music?
I was always around music from the time I was 12. Well, actually, I'll say even earlier than that. I remember when we got our first record player, and the first record we got was The Drifters, Save the Last Dance for Me.
Mm-hmm.
And we would play that thing over. It's the only record we had. So we played it over and over.
A 45?
Yep, a 45. And
how big was the household?
Oh, it was six kids. I had five boys, one girl, my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And so it was eight in a little tiny house, man. We had a two-bedroom house. Mom and dad had a bedroom. My sister had a bedroom. Boys, we were upstairs. It was like army barracks up there,
really?
Lined up, man, I'm telling you. But but my mother decided to open a record shop when I was 12, and so I worked in that record shop from the time I was 12. So I was always around music. You know, I knew when music came out, the day it came out, you know, everything. And then we used to have a little contest between each other. We go, all right, so what do you think this is going to do? I said, I think it'll go number one R&B, top 10 pop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would be right all the time, man. I would always be able to predict them. You know, and I this other thing, and I don't know if it's like, maybe it's not psychic, maybe it's just from experience of knowing people, but I could see you coming across the street to the record shop, and I'd go to the shelf and pull off, say, three songs and guarantee that they would ask for those three. You know, and not two of the three, but all three. You know, I would do it all the time.
How was your record with that?
It was
100%?
Really good, really solid.
What city is this?
Detroit.
Yeah, you're from the D. You were born
from
in the D,
D okay. baby. From, okay. So I grew up under Motown. So wow. So can't even give Mama's record shop credit for that. That's going back to the Motown Review.
Okay.
You know, living there in Detroit under Motown with the Temps, man. You know, I remember as a kid, man, I used to watch every Cadillac that went by, hoping you're going to see David Ruffin, one of the Temps, or Smokey, or one of their cousins. Would have just been just as cool.
You know?
Anybody, man, related. Sitting at the Motown Review, my wife Pam is here with me, and she remembers that so well. We would go down there, man. I mean, five shows a day, the Temptations, Four Tops, Supremes, Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers, Junior Walker, Smokey Robinson. It was just endless. You know, so to grow up under that, how could you not have a love for music, man? You know, and so I was just always in that. When I was 15, this radio station there, WJLB, had a group called the WJLB Soul Teen Reporters.
Okay.
One student from each public school came in once a week, recorded a little 60-second spiel about what was going on at their school. We beat Pershing High last week, 54-52. Cap and gown measurements are Friday. The lovers of the week are, and the number one song is. You know, that kind of thing. So
I thought it was an upfront. I was like, wow, that's amazing.
So they had asked me to do that for my school. And so I kind of wasn't interested at first, but finally, my mother one day had a live broadcast with a local DJ who came out and did his show from there, from the record store. And man, I went into that booth and saw him doing his thing, man. And he's sitting there patting his foot to the music, man, and grooving. And I was like, man, I could do that, you know? And that was the very day I fell in love with radio, that I said, I'm going to do that. And so I went and joined the reporters, and I got so popular from these little 60-second things that ran once, maybe twice a day, that I was more popular than the DJs because I was this kid with a heavy voice, you know? And so they started putting me on weekends for 3 hours on Saturday. And that lasted for about 2 months. They fired the guy who did 8 to midnight weeknights and asked me to sit in for him for 1 week. To give them time to find somebody else. I sat there for 7.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Really?
A teenager? Yeah. A teenager with a radio job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I couldn't even do my whole show live because I couldn't work past 10:30. You know, so I used to go in after school, man.
So you've had that golden voice since you were a teenager.
Yeah, since my voice changed between the summer between 7th and 8th grade. And I remember well because I was in the choir, man. I was the only male first soprano, which I love because I sat with the girls. Next summer I come back and I'm this baritone, you know. But I was really blessed to have a start like that, man. It was just heaven sent.
So for you, was it always radio aspirations, or did you have music? Like, did you want to maybe be a singer or whatever?
I still want to be a singer. But I don't think I'm going to make
Pam shake her head.
Pam will tell you, she tells me two things. He ain't no singer, and he ain't no rocket scientist. No, but I mean, you know, I've always felt that anyone who doesn't sing wants to sing or wants to be a musician. True. As a matter of fact, I said this is part of my induction speech when I was inducted in the Rhythm and Blues Music Hall of Fame, I said, this is just such an honor for me because I've always felt that musicians are always the coolest people in the room. Respect, Questlove. You know,
you're definitely the coolest person.
You're the
coolest
person.
I'm the dweeb today.
We learned our cool from you.
I offered as advice, I mean, as proof, Prince appearing at the Oscars. So you got the biggest stars in the movie stars, $40, $50 million a movie. Prince walked on that stage. They were like little girls, you know? Mm-hmm. Musicians, man. And I said, you know, for one night, y'all let me in your group, you know, and I appreciate that just for one night. I just always wanted to be cool enough to be a musician. I just ain't gonna make it.
So did you have formal training when you finally started to do this radio stuff? Because most people, they'll go to RTF programs in their colleges to learn how to, you know, do upfronts and be prepared. We're going to put you to the test on that.
Oh, okay. Back
sales
and front sales.
Real days.
Yeah, like, so did you, was it a learning curve where you just had to learn on the spot how to do these things, or?
Well, it's, you know, I started so young. I mean, I did go to school eventually. I mean, I was in school already, in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to college and studied radio and TV also. But I was already doing it. I mean, you know, I mean, I was one of the most popular DJs in Detroit, and here I am going to college. It was the experience. Nothing beats that, and you know that. Nothing beats doing it. And so, you know, I think it was just kind of a natural or God-given gift that I had. And, you know, they certainly taught me how to develop it. Like in school, I learned how to use my diaphragm, you know, those exercises like singers to you know, because
really?
I remember my teacher coming up to me in college one day. He walked up behind me and he said, and I didn't know he was there. He says, "So Donnie, how come you always talk like this in the hall?" I said, "'Cause I'm a brother." That's how we talk in the hall. But he's, you know, he taught me that you have to use your diaphragm, that you know, it's like a backhand in tennis. You got to practice it so much that it's second nature, that is the way you talk, and that you can still be cool and talk from here. You don't have to talk from here to be cool, you know?
Have you ever interviewed Barry White?
Oh, yeah.
Only
oh, my God, I love Barry.
Anybody that ever seen interview Barry White will suddenly find themselves trying to.
Out the bass off?
No, man. I love my little boys too much. I ain't trying to get down there with Barry.
Okay, so this is whenever we have anyone that has notable radio experience on the show, we ask them to front sell or back sell a song.
Okay,
so,
all right.
It's been you and
Steven
Hill. You
got to tell him the song, or you have to.
I'm putting. No, I don't even want to. He'll know what the song is.
He just gonna hit it. Okay.
Watch him kill
it. Now, see. Now I got to pick the perfect song with either a short intro or a long intro or middle intro. What should I do?
I think a long intro would.
Longs are easy, just so you they're easier, but whatever.
No, but what if it's Barry White's
Ecstasy? It's okay, musician to musician.
What if it's Barry White's Ecstasy living next to me? That's a
that's one minute.
Okay. That's a 1 minute 60.
Oh, okay.
Temptations. Papa was a Rolling Stone.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like 216.
So, okay.
And I had a jock work for me that actually hit that post once.
Wow. Really?
Wow.
216. It's like, man. Wow.
So, wait a minute. If there is long space in the front, are you expected to feel every last ounce of it?
No, I don't think so. Well, you know, that's interesting because I think most radio people feel that you do. But to me, I love music so much that sometimes the music. So should you talk all over Love's Theme by Barry White and the Love Unlimited Orchestra?
Okay.
No, I mean, you know, some of the music is so beautiful. It's vocal in itself. You know what I mean? It has a moment where it's the intro is over. The song is started.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you ready for your
I think so. Let's try.
Yes, here we go.
Ooh. It's Magic 102.3. You're listening to Donnie Simpson hanging out with Questlove. We got my boys on the stage now, man. These dudes do it right. It's gonna get hot in here. Not hot enough for Morris to sweat. You know he doesn't sweat. He just condensates on Kiss.
Attention! Let me show you a brand. All right, bravo, bravo. So does this also mean that you have to study the song?
Yeah.
As in you, I mean, yeah. when at the height of you being immersed inside of your radio days, would you pick a designated day to just study all the songs?
Definitely not.
Really?
Definitely not. No, I would never study. It's just knowing it. It's just appreciating it. I know it because I love it.
I see.
You know? Yeah, okay. No, I've never studied songs and thought, wow, I could sit there with a stopwatch. This is 18 seconds. You just feel it. You know? You just know. You know? You know where the song is.
And most songs usually have like a 4-bar, 8-bar, whatever intro.
Okay. All right. I see now.
But you ride it, too. It's a rhythm thing. Because that's what you were just doing. You were riding it.
Yeah. There you go.
Like a musician.
So, in
say that again.
Like a musician.
Oh, man.
You wanted to make sure you just never heard that to let him know you're
like a musician.
So, I will say that Detroit is also a very unusual town as far as music culture is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their appreciation for other cultures as well.
Like, yeah.
You know, at one point I knew that I forget the J. Gal band's song that was like number 2 on a particular station up there.
I used to play J. Gal's, man. I used to play J. Gal's.
It was
all kind of stuff by J. Gal's band.
So what was it that made such a black city so open to Gary Newman, the Talking Heads, Fela, or like just because I would look up old playlists from all their radio stations up there, and it was endless. There were no boundaries on what was black music.
Right. I wish I could tell you why we are that way, but I was always that way, man. Love, you know, and I feel like this, you know, for radio program directors or programmers that, you know, radio people feel that people's ears are a lot narrower than they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like different things, man. You know, I mean, growing up in Detroit, I mean, I played all that stuff on the radio, man. Without doubt, the biggest moment in my radio career was breaking Benny and the Jets by Elton John. I've been sitting around with my boy, man. He's turning me on to Elton, right? And so this went on for a week, man. I said, man, I love this song, Benny and the Jets, man. But I was scared to play it because, you know, black folks didn't really know Elton, you know. And so finally I said, man, Claude, I'm playing this song. And I played it, man. I played it twice that night. And I played it the second time because the phone was jumping off the hook from the first time. I'd never seen anything like it before or since. It was so instant. The next morning, the morning DJ calls me at home, wakes me up at 7:30. Donnie, what is this song you played last night? Ginny and the Nets or something? Man, you got to bring that down here. We got to play it. So fast that in 2 days, Elton was on the phone
from
from London, called, wanted to know what's going on. I hear Benny and the Jets is breaking black in Detroit. You know, he comes to Detroit 4 or 5 months later to present me with a gold record. I mean, and this is at the height of his career, man. This is, you know, man, it just turned me out, man. It was just, it was amazing, man. It was just an amazing moment. And I always use it, especially now when I tell that story. It's important because it saddens me that there are young people in radio now with good ears that can't express themselves musically. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sad to me, man. You should be able to have a moment like that to come in. I mean, you're a DJ. I'm supposed to be turning you on to music.
So is it understood then that whatever radio station you go to that you have that some kind of freedom in that way where you can play what you...
You can take out in that way.
Okay. You have freedom to play whatever.
Absolutely.
And when did that start in your career? Because that's amazing.
Because there was no programming director that was ringing the emergency line. Like, I'm certain every radio station has that, the red phone or whatever.
They do, man. Bro, you can get me started.
Are you playing Prince's Dirty Mind? Like, yeah. I'm just saying, like.
They know not to bother me with that. I mean, I just, you know, and I don't mean that to sound vain. I think that I just, you know, they know that that's the only way I can work. I'm not going to do this if you're going to tell me how to do me. I can only do me. And if it works, I told in a negotiation for this return of mine, I said, look, it got caught up in a while. And I just finally said, look, let's make it real simple. I do what I do. If it doesn't work, you tell me, I'll take my records and go home. You don't have to buy out the rest of the contract, nothing. I'm just gone. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. I mean, you know, I have to have that kind of freedom, man. I'm a look out the window kind of guy, man. How does the day feel? Mm-hmm. You know, because it's a spirit that connects us all, man. A computer can't do that. You can't tell me that this song works today. This day feels a certain way. I used to get it when I did the morning show, man. Once an hour, I would get out and walk around the building just to smell it. I need to smell the day. You know, and I know it may sound strange to people.
That's,
and you got to have that to me, you know. And as far as like calling jocks, you know, I programmed WKYS in Washington for 12 years. I mean, and it was, you talk about a meteoric rise. I mean, and I kind of bumped into it. I wasn't trying to program. I never wanted to program. I just wanted to be a jock. But the station was in 16th place. We were losing so badly. And they said, what's wrong with the station? I told them what I felt about it. And I said, well, will you do that? It's like, wow. Yeah, okay. I mean, I felt like I can at least do better than 16th. Man, we went from 16th to number one in 9 months. You know, and it was just with feel. You know, I don't have anything against research. Research is cool as long as you use it. Don't let it use you. You know, it's just another tool if you want to use it. But I remember this programmer coming to me once, had done this big research project. He's paid like $65,000 to research all these songs. And he came to me and he said, man, do you know what the number one song tested for us was? I said, Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On. How did you know that? I was like, I'm a brother. I live this, dog. I ain't on safari.
And you're talking to the research. You're talking to the people.
You know, so... but, you know, when I was programming, I wanted to just bring this up, too, because it's... You know, and I certainly don't mean to come off like I'm, like, chastising programmers.
Right.
But, you know, when I program, man... Hotline, it would never ring. I never once called one of my jocks during the middle of his show to tell him something was bad. Hell, I know you know it. You know it. You did it. You know it's bad more than I do. Why would I call you at that moment and sacrifice the last 2 hours of your show for the first two? That's just, and then bigger than that is that what happens is that then you start talking to me. Because you're afraid of me. You're afraid of that phone ringing. I don't want you talking to me. I ain't got nothing to do with this. Talk to the audience, man. This is about y'all, you know. That's and I gave my jocks freedom. You know, I'm old school like that, man. Bring your records, man. Do your thing, you know. Just express. You'll be amazed at the performance you get from people when you entrust them, when you let them do what they do, when their name is on it instead of just them representing you.
It's like you hired them for a reason.
That's what you hired them for. Right. Let them go, man.
Because this way of thought is not very prevalent right now, have you ever, I know it's another burden, but have you ever considered ownership?
Yeah, I used to think about it. We had looked at it a long time ago, and God, radio stations had gotten so expensive then, it was just kind of crazy. But, you know, I don't know that it's a business that I would be that interested in now. You know, it's, you know, the dollars have dried up to a great degree, as you know. I mean, with everything that is that advertising-based model, radio, television, print, those dollars have gone to the internet, you know, so it's a different day, you know, and radio and TV are lucky. Most of them are just suffering pay cuts. Print shutting their doors.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a different day. So, no, I don't have that level of interest in it now. No.
Speaking of the, you breaking Elton John and beating the Jets, what were some of the other notable artists that you had a first thing? Like, I feel like this person's the next one.
Well, I have a gold record at home that says, thank you for being the first to play Whitney Houston. You give good love.
Wait, I literally only pulled that out there.
Oh, I thought you knew that.
No, I was like, oh, I know you gave Whitney Houston. Well, I saw her when she first came to Video Soul.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that interview. But
do you remember Sade?
Yeah.
First interview with Sade. Her first interview, I think, I know in America, if not on television, period, was with me. Wow. You know? I certainly don't want to sound like I started all of these careers.
Dude, this is why you're here, man. In the chair. Yeah. This is a master class.
No, seriously. Like, there's a lot of artists that we probably wouldn't know about if we hadn't seen them on Video Soul. You know, yeah. You introducing them to us. So you are a very important part.
Well, you know, it's thank you. And I'm
you're allowed to toot your own horn.
No.
And I won't.
But it's so flat. I had Big Daddy Kane on my radio show yesterday. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me, he says, man, I just want to thank you for the first time I was on Video Soul, man. He said, I was so nervous, man. I couldn't believe it. But he said, what blew me away was that I came in there, man, and you treated me like all the other artists. You treated me with respect. And I thought it would be just like, you know, all right, we got this rapper in here. Let's get the rap thing out of the way. He said, and it was just so different, you know, which blew me away that he thought I would treat him. And, you know, as I told him on the air yesterday, I said, Kane, hey, man, if President Obama walked through this door right now or the janitor, they're going to get the same level of love and respect for me. Believe that, you know. So, but it's always fascinating to me that so many artists come up to you and tell you what you meant to their careers. You know, I remember going to see New Edition one night. This is 25 years ago. No, not New Edition. I'm sorry. New Kids. Not the New Kids on the Block. Boys to Men.
Oh, okay.
And,
same thing. No, I'm playing. I'm playing over
there. That's funny. So I go backstage and they go, oh, my God, Donnie's here. Look at it. I said, man, I said, what's the date? April, whatever, 1987. They all knew the date they came on Video Soul. It was that significant to them, you know.
I remember. So I remember that episode. That was when they sang "Oh Mary, Don't You Weep" acapella.
Yeah,
is that right?
And they wore the tan jackets.
You remember better than me.
Wait, only okay because I was in the Motown Philly video.
Uh-huh.
So even me and my parents were like sitting there with the VCR open, like, like the video's going to come on because this is the first time that I'm seeing the video,
yeah,
like.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was, and we all went to high school together, so that was like a moment,
yeah.
Like someone from my homeroom classes that still owes me $2.35. Wanye, thank you. You know, is legit, like on Video Soul.
Yeah, it meant something to sit on that couch, you know, and that's flattering. That's really an awesome thing.
So, I want to ease into Video Soul. How did How were you convinced to... Well, you didn't totally abandon radio when you did Video Soul.
Oh, no.
You did both, but did you figure that, okay, it's time for the black version of MTV to come to fruition, well, and I want to be a part of history?
No, well, this has not happened. I mean, it wasn't my creation. I got a call from Bob Johnson asking me, or actually it was Jeff Lee, his right-hand man. Said, we're starting this show called Video Soul, and we'd like for you to host it. At the time, I was still doing radio, of course, but I was also, I just started doing TV locally in D.C. for the last 2 years. I was a sports anchor.
George Michael.
Yeah, I was George Michael's backup for George Michael's sports machine.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was cool. I mean, I enjoyed that, but I like music. Mm-hmm. You know, sports is not what I do. So, anyway.
Thank you. Go ahead. No.
So
I'm paid. Bill ain't even paying attention.
I was just, sports ain't your thing either.
That's actually how I know you. I went to school down in College Park, Maryland.
Oh, really?
In late 80s, early 90s. So I was watching the George Michael sports.
Oh, wow.
Dream Machine?
Sports Machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sports him, he's sports legend, Donnie Simpson.
Yeah.
So anyway, they said wanted me to do this show, and I'll be very honest with you. My first answer was no.
Really?
You know, no, I didn't want to do it. I've always been very careful about what I get involved in because all I have to sell is image. You know, so I'm very protective of that. You know, it's got to be right. And BET, in its infancy, wasn't a pretty baby.
Okay, can we talk about that?
Yeah, right.
It was kind of public service.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Public access.
Right, so I didn't want to do that. But I thought about it for 2 days, and then finally, the bottom line became this, that this is our first black television network. If you have something to offer it, you have to do that. Period. Let's go. And so I'm glad I did, man. I mean, it was, it was amazing. When we first started, we were in 1.5 million homes. When I left, that number was like 45 million. You know, now it's like 100 or something. I mean, it's just crazy, you know. And, it put me in black houses all across this country, you know. And not just black.
I didn't even know about your radio career. I just thought.
Yeah. Most people around the country don't. They're shocked when they find out I do radio. Yeah. But it was really something special, man. It was, Terry Lewis, we were talking about it recently, and he was saying how that, I was just telling him about the love and respect that I get and how it just blows me away, you know, every time. And he says, it's because you mean something to people, you know, that you represented a time when music was fun. You know, the videos were fun and all of that. You know, it was clean fun, you know, and you represent that time. It's like, well, I never thought about it like that.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I remember one night VH1 did a series called Black in the 80s, and they had interviewed me for it. And so they told me it was coming on, so I watched it that night. It was an hour long. And the first 15 minutes they did Brian Gumbel, the first black to host a early morning national television show. Mm-hmm. Then they did Arsenio Hall, first black to host a late night talk show. Then they did Cosby, the Cosby Show, and first black TV show where the mother and dad were a doctor and a lawyer, not a plumber and a janitor or something, you know. And then they did Donnie Simpson and Video Soul. And, man, I'll never forget it. When the show ended, all I could think was, well, how the hell am I supposed to sleep tonight? Seriously, because I'd never had it put in perspective like that. You know what I mean? It's like a line from that I've always loved from Elton John, Rocket Love. Not Rocket Love, that's Stevie Wonder. Rocket Man.
Rocket Man.
Right, when he says, and all the science, I don't understand. It's just my job 5 days a week. You know, I mean, you think this is a rocket man, an astronaut. It's like, it's so glorious. You know, you're a DJ. It's a glorious, you know. Man, I don't care who you are or what you do, it's just what you do.
So you know? At the time, you weren't thinking that you're doing a historical service
absolutely
for mankind?
Absolutely not.
That there's a bunch of 11-year-olds watching you and recording this?
Nah, straight up.
Because we will record the show and watch it
over
ad nauseum
and over
and over again.
That's crazy to me. No, I never thought. I mean, I've had three or four of the ESPN anchors come up to me and tell me, you're the reason I do TV, because I used to watch you. It's like, that's mind blowing to me, of course. I'm telling you, man.
Between you and probably the only person that could challenge or even match your cool might be Don Cornelius. Like, you two
you were like the
heir
apparent. So yeah, it was.
Yeah, with cool.
Yeah,
he
man.
Was one era and then you kind of were the next.
And that's the thing. You always pervade this level of intelligence and cool and knowledge, no matter who the artist was. Like, if I were interviewing, like, Wild Animal era Vanity, I would have been sweating profusely. But you gave her the same level of respect that you would have done for Sergio Mendez Saida Garrett or Quincy Jones or Al B. Short. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that to me was even more amazing. Like, it's one thing to interview someone that you love and that you're, you know, that you have history of. Like, I'm sure that, you know, if a Motown luminary comes on the show, then, you know, you're just giddy about it. Mm-hmm. But how do you prepare yourself for an artist that you might not know of? Like, say of like first year Karen White comes on the show, and you might not know that much about her, but
I ask her.
Like you did
I ask her.
The other day.
Really? Seriously, that's how I prepare.
Yeah,
there's,
but I've
there's
known
no
her
preparation.
For like 10 years.
Oh. But there's no preparation. I mean, every artist I've ever had on Video Soul, they would give me a bio and a list of questions, and I would take and go, all right, and sit that on the side. Seriously, I would never look at it. Because I felt that there's nothing wrong with me not knowing you grew up in Tuscaloosa, that I can ask you that. I mean, this is an interview. This is getting to know you. What's wrong with that being the first? So where you grow up at? You know, oh, I grew up in Philly. Oh, man, what happened to the Sixers the other night?
Right.
That's conversation.
Okay.
You know, that's just, you know, I mean, if it's somebody I knew, I'm telling you, this may be the depth of the preparation. I'd go, all right, Luther's on the show today. I'm riding in and I go, what is it you want to know about Luther? Man, why does your weight keep going up and down?
You end up taking
that under control. Say, all right, that's what I'm going to ask him. And, you know, it's...
But you could ask him that, though. I don't think nobody else can get away with asking that.
But, you know, and that is a blessing for you to say that. You get it. That it's just like with all due respect, I'm going back to Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show, that when the conversation with Johnny was always different from any other host I ever saw, because they had so much respect for him. He could ask things that others might not, because they just lose. But you know, Jimmy's like that, too, because he's so cool, you know. When you're cool with people like that, man, and they feel you and it's real, it's not staged questions. And, you know, when you've read the bio, the chances are I'm going to ask you a question based on that bio. It's something that you've been asked 1,000 times already before.
What was your first interview on? Do you remember your very first interview on the show? Who was your first guest?
Absolutely. My very first interview was with the Fat Boys.
What year was this? What were you? Oh,
it had to have been
83 or 84.
Good God.
Something really? Like that. Yeah, man. Sure. The Fat Boys. Second one was with Rick James,
ooh,
bitch.
Okay. What was that like? Okay. We have yet to have a potential off the chains guest. We're kind of entertaining that. Like, all of our guests are either like super legend or we worship them.
Yeah.
But okay, Rick James is a perfect example. If someone has the potential to sort of be off the chains,
oh yeah,
how do you reel them in? How do you maintain? How do you drive the car and not have them drive the car?
Wow, that's wow! What a great question.
Because you still have to steer and navigate.
Yeah, you still got to steer.
And get your 12-minute segments in.
Right.
And it was the 80s, so we know that Rick might have been on that, you know.
Yeah.
So you don't know where the conversation was going to go.
But I never had that problem. I never had anybody go rogue on me. Just, you know, go crazy, go just... It just never happened.
But a little left. You've had some people maybe go a little left. I mean, because even that New Edition interview
music,
was kind of...
Everybody's left in this business.
That's right.
You know, shoo.
I was going to say for you...
An interview gone a little weird and you guys had to do a lot of editing magic?
Back in the day for...
Like, what interview was like, got through that?
No, most of the years on Video Soul, we were live.
Whoa.
So not so wow. Go back and edit. It was live until the last 3 or 4 years.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know.
I
never knew that.
Yeah, yeah. We used to do it live, man.
That was risky.
But
today
that's the way I liked it because that made it like radio for me. I hate tape. I hate recording. It's a different pressure that you perform better when it's live. For me,
it's true.
You know, when it's live and I know you don't get to back it up, and then it's real. Because for me, when you're backing it up and editing, then you're trying to make it perfect. And like, I never, ever, ever watched Video Soul. I don't listen to tapes of my radio show because I feel like then I'm trying to make myself perfect, and I'll never be that. All I need to be is me. That's it. All I need to be.
Donnie Simpson, does that mean a programmer's never pulled you in an air check meeting and said...
Oh, Lord, no.
Since you were a teenager, there's never been a boss. Because, I mean, I don't know if people know this, but like in radio, usually your boss will, at some point at the end of the week, pull you in a room and say, let's listen to what you did here.
You know what? For one period, when I first moved to D.C. In 77, we did have a program director, and oh, my goodness... It was crazy for me. For a year and a half, I did live under that. I've forgotten that because it was such, you know, that's out of how many years? God, I started in 69. So, you know, 1.5 years of slavery. But, you know, where he would walk in with a stopwatch and go, that was 17 seconds. You had to come in under 15 seconds on anything you said. You know, I mean, it was just, so finally I was gone. I was gone. I said, I can't do this. I'm leaving. And I had a job offer in L.A. And so they offered me the music directorship to keep me. So I stayed. And then I worked under this music director. My music director was, he's a brother, but he had so much.
Or was he?
Let me be careful. Yeah, or was he really?
We know, wink, wink, wink. We get it.
Yeah, we need Mueller to investigate this one. We would have our record meetings or every week, you know, the music meetings, and he'd go around the room. I was the music director under him. He was the program director, and I had two assistants, and both of them were political appointees. This is D.C.
Wow.
One was David Brinkley's son. The other was this senator's son.
Oh, and so no.
He'd go around the room. He'd play, I'd never forget this one. He'd play Beast of Burden, Rolling Stones.
Right.
Whoa. You know? So he goes, so John, what do you think of that? Oh, I love it. I think it's great. Dave, what do you think? I think it's great. I think, Donnie, what do you think? I think it's great, but we can't play that shit.
Thank you. That ain't no Benny and the Jets.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, I love it, but it's got to fit. Brothers, I ain't gonna.
Can I assume that was the single after Miss You? Were you guys playing Miss You?
No, that was before Miss You. Because
You came after?
As I recall it, because I played Miss You as a program director.
Okay.
So I wasn't programming then. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we could check the records.
Okay. I always thought Miss You was first.
I think that's the way it went.
Okay.
Because I played Miss You. That works. Beast of Burden does not. Little River Band reminiscing. Yeah. We can't play that, man. Yeah. You know?
Really?
Yeah.
It seemed like that would work. I love that song.
Wait, I love reminiscing, though.
Because you also got to consider the area, right? Like, it's not just the people.
Yeah,
it's the area you in.
It's D.C. and go-go, baby. You know? It was hard. Yeah.
That's my next question.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as the top tastemaker of D.C. that had the world's ears... How is such a beautiful subculture like go-go, how has it met so many obstacles? And I feel like the ripple never gets to expand west more west than West Virginia or right. Ohio.
West Virginia.
Mm. Or okay.
The Potomac River. Forget,
it's like let's just go back to Virginia. Yeah, but it's
I know.
You've lived in D.C. for decades. Yeah. I assume you still do.
Oh, yeah.
How is black people's jam band music not resonated to the rest of the United States of America, at least?
I have no idea why that is. It's like, I mean, we thought it was going to break out when we've had.
And Good to Go, Chuck, that movie came out?
Chuck was the first.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Chuck Brown.
Bustin' Loose was the first. Yeah. Number one go-go song in the country. I mean, it was number one song in the country that was go-go.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second was The Butt by EU with the help of the movie School Days, you know. So we're thinking, man, it's going to break out now. And it never did. Those are the only two to this day that ever went number one in the country. You know, you had people like Grace Jones. Some people used it.
Elements in the
yeah,
songs.
Yeah, used elements, yeah. But it just never broke out for some reason. And I don't know, you know. I don't know why the rest of the world never caught on to drop the bomb on the white boy. You know, I just don't get it.
Yeah, well, I wonder why that never happened. It's a mystery.
You think that Steve, has something to do with it?
I have no idea. I'm at a loss.
That might be.
Joe, the police man let you down.
We see now.
No idea how that didn't work out.
It's weird.
Shocker.
So on the other side of that coin, though, worrying about someone going rogue, there could be the other side of that coin of having artists that are shy and reclusive. Now,
yeah,
as obsessed as I am with all of David Rich's work. Mm-hmm. As a writer,
mm-hmm.
And read both of those Aretha books.
Mm-hmm.
I know that she was a frequent guest of yours on the show, mm-hmm. and you going to her house and her playing for you. Oh, yeah, I remember. And she, you know, she was rather loquacious. She talked a lot, which if she didn't know you, you could tell that, you know, there was a distance there.
Right.
So how did you... What was a hard interview for you, like for an artist that wasn't that talkative? Or did you ever interview Prince ever in your career?
Yeah, on radio.
Okay, what period?
Never on
what
Video
year?
Soul. This was about 7
what?
Years ago.
Oh, I thought you meant 70. I was like,
oh, No. Because you remember Prince didn't do any interviews.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did I miss that?
He had done that one interview. I think it ran on MTV, and he interviewed himself.
Right.
Actually, I was watching a clip on YouTube today of you introducing that on Video Soul.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So, no. And it was Prince and Michael were the only two artists that I always wanted to interview, you know, but never got to have them on Video Soul, you know.
But
even
did
though
you
we
ever
were
get
friends.
To know them off of... Yeah,
oh, yeah,
I was
yeah,
about
yeah.
to say.
Oh, yeah. Me and Prince were friends, and, you know, as a matter of fact, the... night you referenced earlier when we went to Flight Time for the Pandemonium album for the time, we partied at
Paisley Park?
At Paisley Park that night. You'll love this story. This is so funny.
Yes, bring the story.
That Wednesday, we were recording Video Soul. I had David Bowie on the show, and who was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the show, we were talking, and I was telling him I was going to Minneapolis that Friday to do this time thing. And he says, I'm playing Minneapolis Friday. You ought to come to the show. I said, all right, cool. I'm there. So get my buddy to go with me, Sugar Ray Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
So we rolled to Minneapolis, and we do the thing.
I don't recall.
So casual. Just,
that's a good line.
Yeah. Wow. That's so casual.
Yeah, well, that's me and Ray hung every day, man. That's all my boy still to this day. Wow. But so anyway, we get to the show that Friday night, and they had set like 8 seats at the soundboard, right? So we go to sit in our seats, and so I'm going by, and I bump this lady in front of me, and I say, excuse me, ma'am. And Prince turns around.
Wow!
So,
what do you say?
He says, hey, Donnie. Hey, Prince, what's happening, man? And, so sorry about that. No, that's cool. And so then he turns back around a minute or two later. He says, I'm having a party at Paisley Park tonight. You and Ray ought to come. I said, all right, cool. So we go to the party, man. You know, it's like 12 people there, man.
He always parties with just six people.
I know. It's me, Prince, Ray, David Bowie, and his band members, Cat.
Right.
He was dancing with him. And my boy Jeff Newman, who produced my show, Video Soul. And I mean, that was like, that was it, you know. But we had the greatest time, man. It was just the coolest night. And he played the Black Album that night.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And now this is, so years later, he tells me, because you know that album was notorious because it wasn't released.
Right.
And so years later, Prince told me, he said, you know, you're the reason I didn't release the Black Album.
What?
And I said, what? What do you mean? He says, you remember what you said that night at Paisley Park? I said, what? He said, you said, this is such a groove, and I was about so much more.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, is he serious, or is he just...
Damn you, Donnie!
Seriously, that was really deep to me. That because that is what I said. It's like, man, this is such a groove, you know. But then, but what Prince needed to know is that you could be about that much more, but I can't hear it. I don't hear lyrics. I hear groove. I hear vibe. I hear feel. You know, I know where it is. But man, it could be 30 years later, and I'd be like, damn, that's what they were talking about. You know, too close. He was, but near, bro.
See, but the thing is, it's like, the thing is, I know that, you know, a lot of his earlier Nelson George reviews of his post-Rise, post-1999 Rise, kind of got under his skin. And that he didn't want to be that philosophical, and he just wanted to let y'all know that he was still down.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, you know, that was his statement of letting y'all know, like, yo, I'm still down, and this is me. But and you validate it, you're still down because that's such a groove. And,
yeah.
But maybe there's that itch in his soul that's just like, I gotta say the deep statement, and
right.
And we're stuck with Love Sexy. Damn.
I got to tell you, this is going back to something you said earlier, but it's so cool that because Jimmy and Terry are my boys, mm-hmm. and my mom introduced me to the Time. That's who told me about the Time.
How?
Well, I was in D.C. Mom still had a record shop in Detroit. Oh, okay. You talk about that diversity.
What was the name of the
Detroit
record store? What was
Simpsons
the...
Record Shop. Wow. Still there. Wait, 50
what?
Years.
Wow.
50 years,
what?
Man.
Really?
50 years. Yes, sir.
And you've never been there?
No. I always shop in a Grosse Pointe Blank. Wait, what's Grosse Pointe in Michigan? It's the outskirts, right?
Like 25
years.
There's Grosse Pointe.
Right on, yeah.
There's a place called Melodies and Memories out there that I do all my digging. But Simpsons Record Shop is still there.
Yeah.
A mom and pop.
Yep, mom and pop record store. The one I told you, but that's where I started my career.
Steve.
Still there, man.
Yeah,
I'm booking a flight right now.
Steve and I are doing a week tour of America at record stores. No, we
she
do
sells
it all the
more
time.
Hot dogs and candy than she does records now.
Can I interject a question, Donnie? What's your record collection looking like these days?
There's a frown over there. Are you in a situation where you had to get rid of stuff and put it in storage for the sake of the marriage?
No. That's all
the
my records right? are at
yeah.
home.
Yeah, yeah.
All my shaking records of the head.
You, are you asking what am I into, or
well,
what do you
still have? All
your physical collection
from when you were a kid and stuff like that.
I still have everything, man. I would assume it's worth some money, man.
Okay, fire in the house. Hypothetical.
whoa, that's a knock wood situation. Also, yeah.
Okay. Fire in the house.
Uh-huh.
You're saving five records.
Ooh. Okay.
Top five.
What
albums?
Ooh. What's your 45s into? Okay. Yes. What five albums are you saving?
What's Going On? Hot Buttered Soul.
Yes.
Ooh. Off the Wall.
Wait, now before you name the last two, I also mean that I'm certain that you have rare items of your your collection as well.
Can we just save his whole collection? We'll all show up at the fire and help him get the fucking records out.
All right, what are the final two?
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. I got one more. Woo! That's hard. Oh, look, they all fighting. They trying to get out the fire. Oh, wow. One left. Oh, ooh, God. I got Marvin. Let's see.
Fire's burning.
Stevie's Anthology. I'm cheating now.
No, no greatest hits. No greatest hits. Original. You get one Stevie record.
Wow, one Stevie. Oh, my goodness, man.
You'll get
That's
rest.
Like Sophie's Choice.
You'll stream. you can stream the rest on Pandora. I'm just saying that.
All right. Fulfilling this first finale.
That's the Stevie Wonder record you chose?
I don't know. You put me under pressure.
That was a great crescendo.
What would you say?
That's weird. Like, because out of the Genius period, that's my least favorite Stevie record of the Genius period.
Really?
It's the one I know the least songs on.
I know it, but... besides Creepin'...
Music of My Mind?
For me, I don't know why I like Music of My Mind out of the five of them.
Because it was the first of the five.
No, but even then, I was like one.
It was the first of the five.
He was just more raw in that.
It was the first of the five.
And it was the...
Or do you count first. Where I'm coming from?
It was the first of the five.
Yes.
The first record I ever bought was by Stevie. Uptight.
Really?
That's the first... purchase I ever made of music.
The first, your very first record?
Yep, because it's before my mother. I didn't buy records for long because she opened a record shop and then I got in the radio. But I paid 69 cents for Baby, Everything Is All Right.
So 45s were 69 cents that came out 66?
66 or 67.
Well, also know that you as a concert spectator, that you've probably seen some of the best shows of all time.
Ooh.
Now, in your radio career, you told us about your childhood career, but what were the experiences like? Because I'm certain that you saw the very first Mothership Connection shows, like stuff we take for granted now,
like
the ideas of the Jacksons levitating or Earth, Wind & Fire levitating, all that stuff, like.
Man,
what concert will stay with you forever as far as like
all the Michael concerts?
Really?
I mean, he's just the greatest ever to me. Yeah, without doubt. Michael, the Fire, see Earth, Wind, and Fire, man, in their prime, with Maurice, was amazing. The very first concert I ever saw in my life, James,
Where?
Cobo Arena in Detroit.
What year?
This had to be 67?
Jesus.
Something like that. Maybe 68. Did he do See It Loud? So, no, it was before See It Loud. So, See It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, was 68. And James was my king.
Right.
And I used to tell him that all the time, man, you're my king. I'm your soldier. There ain't nothing I wouldn't do for you. And I meant that, man, because he taught me to be proud of who I was, my skin color, man. See It Loud was the most significant song ever for me. There would never be a song more important than that for me, And so James gave me all that sense of pride. He had assists from Curtis Mayfield and, but it was James. So to see James in concert was just amazing early on. Because I remember as a kid sitting there at 12 years old. So, I was 12, so that was... That was 66. And all I could think of, I'm not a musician, so I don't know why, but I'm like, damn, this dude's got two drummers. He's going to wear one out. He knows that. One ain't going to make it. So, I saw Sammy Davis Jr. That was amazing to see Sammy, you'll appreciate this. I know it's shifting gears a little bit.
Nope.
But
say it.
people that I've had the opportunity to spend time in the studio with.
Tell me.
Now, of course, you know, there are a bunch of them. But the four that just, when I think back on my life and my career, to just blow me away. Marvin.
Whoa.
Sly.
What?
Prince. Prince invited me in the studio one night, and that's rare. He didn't, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't have people in the studio. And Stevie, you know, to spend time in the studio with Stevie, man, was just, oh my goodness.
Can you speak of watching Marvin in the studio?
Hmm?
Can you speak of watching Marvin in the studio?
Well,
like,
actually, it's kind of cheating because he wasn't doing his album. He was recording the originals. He was producing the originals. Wow. Yeah. Did you know that? You know.
Yeah, because
they
did
Baby, I'm For Real.
Baby, I'm For Real.
Yeah, just to keep you satisfied, right?
Yeah, and they redid just to keep
and
you
the
satisfied.
Bells. Yeah. But Pam was with me. She was just my girlfriend then. She's my wife of 43 years now. Ooh. But
it's crazy because she only 44. It's crazy.
I know. But I remember Pam saying to me, like, because Marvin was trying to show him how to sing the song. And she goes, God, why didn't he just sing it? Can't nobody do that. Yeah. But, you know, Marvin, when he invited me to the studio, how cool is this? I'm hanging out with Ron Banks of the Dramatics.
Wow.
Yeah, me and Ronnie was my best friend in that side of the business, of music. Ronnie was my best friend, all the Dramatics, but Ronnie in particular. And so we're riding down the street, and we see Marvin going in his house, going up the driveway. And so Ronnie says, there's Marvin, man. Let's stop and say hello to him. I said, all right, cool. So we stop, and he introduces. He says, yeah, man, I listen to you every night, man. I was like, all right, cool.
Wow.
And he says, you ought to come and check me out in the studio. I said, all right, I'd love to do that. He says, well, I'm going in tomorrow night. He says, but here, let me give you this phone number. Call me tomorrow morning, man, because I'll get up in the morning and decide to climb Mount Everest, and I'll be gone. You know, and he said it in such a way, it's like, I'm not trying to act like I'm eccentric or something like that. I'm just telling you, dog, you need to check because I'll do that. Right. That's how I roll.
He's known for that.
Right.
He is
right.
Known for that.
Yeah, man. So
not many cats know that Marvin lived in a bread truck for 7 months in Hawaii.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Right after Dream of Lifetime came out. He took his remaining money.
That was right before... I thought it was before Midnight Love, I thought.
Well, yeah, after Dream of Lifetime. Wow. Before he did that, before he moved to Belgium and lived in the monastery.
And like, did, what you call it?
This is around 80. Yeah. He purchased a bread truck because it had a good aroma to it.
Oh, you mean that in our lifetime?
Yeah, in our lifetime.
Dream of Lifetime.
In our lifetime. Yes.
If I had to pick one voice, I mean, one artist, I mean, Marvin's my favorite vocalist ever. I just love Marvin. But the most... intimate, is that the right word?
Mm-hmm.
Most emotional moment I ever had with music was with Marvin one night. I was sitting there listening to Flying High in a Friendly Sky. And I'd heard the song for 40 years. I told you I don't hear lyrics, right? So not really. I mean, Flying High in a Friendly Sky, all right. I guess it's commercial for United. I don't know. You know, but that night, I'm sitting there and I'm listening to it, man, and I heard every word after... It had to be 30 years at that point. And man, you know, I'm telling you, bro, I sat there and cried for 40 minutes. And I mean bawling, man, because I saw Marvin's life and his drug addiction. It spells it out so well. You know, my second oldest brother was classic Vietnam case. You know, came back from the Nam, decorated war hero, addicted to heroin. You know, and watched that struggle that he went through and sent my family through. You know, we all got touched by that thing. And, you know, I just sat there, man. It just took me to a place where nothing but music could take me to where I went that night, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I go to the place where the danger awaits me. Self-destruction's in my hand, you know.
Yeah.
In the morning, I'll be all right, but then the pain, soon the night comes and the pain. Oh man. It just, I was out running yesterday morning, and that's, I always have my iPod on random, on shuffle. And that song came on. I'm running. crying. People, you saw me, you thought I was sweating. No, that fool crying.
So, yeah. Can I ask? I mean, it's no secret that where we are now in 2017 is a long way from where we were in 1967 or 69 when you first started.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that it has to be bothersome to not necessarily watch the evolution of where black music and black culture is going.
Or de-evolution, rather.
Or, yeah, just the de-evolution of it. Does it worry you that very few members of the next generation aren't necessarily grabbing on to the baton that the forefathers had and sort of not even dropping it, but just having a disregard or a sheepish shrug, like, eh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, is it, well, I'm just saying that you seem to be an open book culturally to everything. Like, you know, in 69, you know, Say Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud changed your life. I'm certain that Prince's arrival with, or the onslaught of Dirty Mind and what he would later unleash was new and shocking, but you seem to be aboard of it and what came afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
At what point, and you don't have to specifically mention names or whatever, but at what point, or at least the year, did you, were the seeds of indifference there for you?
Where it's sort of like,
man, like, I guess this is what passes for talent, or this is what passes for music, or guess I'm just getting older.
Yeah, well, you know, well, first of all, I have to tell you this, that I was always hesitant. I never wanted to make the statement that they don't make music like they used to. Okay? Because I felt like every generation makes that statement. And they're right. They don't make it like they used to. They never have. They never will. It's always changing.
Mm-hmm.
So and then I remember when we did the interview with Quincy Jones from his house, the Back on the Block album.
I was going to say, yeah. You commended him on being open-minded. And that always stuck with me. Like, I'd never want to be the old guy that's like,
exactly.
You know, I hate this music.
Right.
And
right.
You said that, and I was like, oh, okay, that's what I need to be.
Yeah.
Like
Quincy, you know, you look, I mean, that album, I go to do this interview with Quincy. I mean, there's Ray Charles and Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Big Daddy Kane,
Melly Mel,
Ice-T. Yeah. You know, let me kick my credentials. Young player, bred in South Central, L.A., home of the body bag. You want to die? Wear the wrong color rag. I used to walk in stores and yell, lay down. You flinch an inch, AK sprayed. Woo! Man. I
just rap with Donnie said.
I'm sorry.
Like a duet. That was a duet.
Holy shit. Man. You deserve that.
But the first time I heard that, me and L.A. Reid had this conversation because I was telling him, I said, man, when I first got that album, I was listening to it. I said, it took me 40 minutes to get through the first song. And he said, me too. Because, you know, I mean, I know Gula Matari, Quincy Jones, you know.
Right, right.
I'm
right.
Like, and then I opened up, the first thing I hear is this gangster rap. But then all through the album was like a lesson to me that, you know, you can embrace it all. All right, so now they're doing the human beatbox. All right. Well, let's get Ella, Sarah, Bobby McFerrin, and Take Six. No instruments? All right, well, let's do that. You know, it was just, he could make it all work. All right. Now, get past that, and I'll have to tell you that in the last 5, 6, 7 years, you know, it's not like there was any particular moment where I felt like, well, where are we? Where is R&B? But, you know, I look at the charts, it's like, me, Jimmy, and Terry have had this conversation, like, it's just hip-hop and pop, you know? Like, we're not there. You know, I miss those days, man, when the top 10 pop songs, you know, half of them were black. You know, and I mean black.
Soul.
You know, right. Soul. There you go. Chart. Thank you.
Soul chart.
Right. You know, I miss that. It seems like it's changed. And very frustrating for me. You're asking me the question, but I ask you the question. Is it that the musicians have bailed on it? They're just so nonchalant about it? Or is it that the music companies don't want that anymore, aren't giving it voice?
I have a theory. No, because they're there. I could name about 6 or 7 people on the internet that are like killing that might not get a shot because they're not easily digestible. But I also feel as though I don't know where black people are spiritually.
I was about to say black people don't go to church no more.
Yeah, I don't know where we are spiritually now as opposed to 50 years ago where we relied on the church.
As a training ground for singers.
Yeah. Now,
singers and that's musicians. True.
Wow. You know,
musicians. I never thought about that. Yeah.
I'm going to be, this is probably the most explicitly honest I've ever been concerning my spirituality on this show. But just lately, just as far as the political turmoil that we're living in right now.
Yeah. House of Cards season 6.
Yeah, pretty much. and what's been going on in the past 3 years, as far as justice is concerned, as far as the unarmed killings of black boys and black women. You know, I used to question on Twitter, like, well, you know, where's the spiritual center that says that this is wrong? Like, if the injustice that was happening in 2016, all those unarmed shootings were happening in 66, 67, I would have heard from the church from now. And I'm not saying that, okay, well, I'm maybe questioning, you know, because it's so blasphemous for black folks that have been raised in the church to even have thoughts of atheism or whatever. But, you know, just where the idea of Christianity in 2016 it seems very tainted to me than it was when I was a kid growing up in church and, you know, your grandma took you to church. You had to be there for 8 hours. So I know that if I'm sort of questioning that, then I know there's a lot of people that are just like me that are moving away from that spirituality. I'm not saying that, oh, well, God doesn't exist if all this injustice is happening. But I know that, you know, our answer was always primarily, always hang on to the Lord. The Lord will make it all right, and just, you know, and I don't know if black people are there now. Like, even in our singers, like, the hero now is Rihanna, who is about as not in the church.
Anti.
She's more the mall, or the, you know, like, I don't know where, like, her home base is, where you think of Aretha, it's like, oh, that's the church.
No doubt.
You know, but the generation that Rihanna's raising isn't spiritual-based.
Like Lauryn Hill, in a way.
That's
it's not just blank. I mean, you look at what the Christian right just allowed to happen in our last election. You know, I mean, if you can give him a pass for talking about grabbing women how he wants to grab them, and that's okay.
Right. Yeah, we've just lost spirituality.
Yeah, right.
Not even religion, but just spirituality. So I just feel like that reflects in the music, and if that's not there, then we've pretty much lost soul music. Unless the spirit of it has just gone to the UK, where there's still people there.
And we're also becoming more inclusive as a people as well. And I think that has a lot to do with it, too. We weren't, you know, not watered down, for lack of a better term, but you're talking about the 60s and when music was made then. It definitely was not as inclusive as it is in 2017. And then you have to deal with the cultural appropriation and who's making the money off of the soul music.
Well, I just point that at labels not wanting to do more work than, you know, if they can just market one artist one certain way instead of having to do it a whole bunch of different ways to target, you know, all these different audiences.
And if they can sing soul and not be black and capture two different audiences, whoa, Adele, whoa.
So do you find it ironically weird that some of the more popular soul artists are not looking like the person in the mirror when you're listening to it, like, or is that to you just?
Wait, like, I'm sorry. What do you say?
No. I'm saying that now. If you think of soul music, 9 times out of 10, it's Sam Smith or Adele.
Right. Oh, I know. yeah, it's strange. Yeah, it's strange, you know. And I mean
the artists and if you are got still
soul,
there.
I don't fault you for that.
Right.
You know, I mean, you got soul. I mean, the artists that you just named, very soulful. And I love their music,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, you know, it reminds me of watching, and God, should I call this out? Well, American Idol or, you know, these shows. And, you know, my wife and my daughter would get so mad at me when I was just, they finally just stopped watching it with me because I'm sitting there going, oh, God, he's so crazy. It's like, what? You know, I'm
so
like,
you like,
I'm like, I take you to church this Sunday and just yeah. on this Sunday and find you 3-4 voices better than anything you've heard on this whole season. Hmm. You know, that's how I always felt about
except
it.
Except for Fantasia and Jennifer Hudson. You know.
Well, yeah, there were moments. See, right, right.
The thing that I find problematic about reality shows and the contest is that, you know, I feel like since 97, we've negated the idea of subculture or an underground.
Mm.
You know, Aretha Franklin wasn't made in 13 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, she was made in 17 years. She started at 8, you know, and it took slow development in her father's church, in a subculture. And,
yeah.
You know, because of the rush, because music is more as a means of escape for poverty for a lot of black folk, you know, it's more or less probably used now as a means to survive as opposed to express your spirituality. So, yeah, I find those shows rather dangerous, but that's a whole other episode of Questlove Supreme.
Yeah, and those shows aren't really about music. They're about TV. You know what I mean? It's not about...
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? About who's the greatest. It's about...
That's why you get William Hung's out there.
Exactly.
Right. Just I like try to get you to watch.
My child with your right home. I'm sorry. That's what I was... So what would you...
By the way, I found a CD at my mother's record shop of Aretha singing in her church, in her father's church when she was 12. How good is that?
What?
Mama had that in her record shop. It's like, still have it? My God. I have it. She doesn't have it anymore.
I was going to say, did you guys sell Reverend C.L. Franklin's sermons?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, man, we're making a pilgrimage because I know somewhere in the storage unit there's a gym in there.
Yeah.
We are going up there. Hot dogs in
America. She more or less specializes in gospel music now anyway. As a matter of fact, wow, going back, I remember I used to send Elton gospel music to London because he couldn't get it.
Wow.
Right. I'd send him stuff from my mom's record shop, man. Yeah.
All right, we are coming to Simpsons record shop.
Is this a DC trip? Is this a DC trip? You
no, it's Detroit.
That's Detroit. That's
Detroit.
Better than DC.
Detroit. Well, wait, is that where every? Okay, so it's right because the record store is still in existence, right?
Yeah, it's still. For right now, it's struggling though. It's tight.
Because it sounds like Donnie might have half of the records in DC too.
No.
Yeah. Well, I got a few.
Okay.
We'll come and save the store. Don't worry. Wait, I want to ask one. This is kind of backwards to go back then, but since there's a movie about Detroit coming out in August about the 67 riots,
mm-hmm.
I want to ask, how was your mom's store? How was that unscathed from? Because 60% of the city went up in flames during those riots up there. Like, how are you guys able to protect the store and not have it affected?
Well, we also had Simpsons Patrol Service.
that
started first, actually. My dad had a rent-a-cop service. So he protected the store. Plus, you know, she was protected anyway. Everybody in the neighborhood knew Mama.
They knew, okay.
Oh, so yeah, they man. Knew. She was protected. They weren't, you know... Mama's a...
They weren't going to burn the jams. Okay.
They weren't going to burn... No.
None of
no. But, you know, and Mama's always been cool, man. Like, you go over there. My mother has the best security force there is. The winos. They don't miss no days.
Don't mess with that damn Miss Simpson's house.
Oh, yeah. You know, they were always so cool with Mom. You know, if you need a cigarette, whatever, man, you know, Mom's got them, man. Just whatever. They call it Mississippi.
Mississippi.
But, you know, when she come to open up, man, they'd be standing in front of her store. They stand there, make sure she's in okay. Once she's in, they go across the street because they know it's bad for business, you know. But let somebody come in there looking threatening.
Yeah, they own
Enforce, baby. I'm telling you.
What side of Detroit was it on? East or west side?
East side. Yeah, not far east.
Okay.
Yeah. It's east side.
One eyebrow up, not two eyebrows.
Right. Right. Yeah. Wait, you start thinking about your pilgrimage again.
Yeah, I was like, oh, maybe. You stay home, Steve. Yeah.
Steve, you might have to skip this one.
East side of Detroit.
I want to ask you, do you still keep in touch with any of the old crew, like Sherry Carter, Madeline? I think Paul Porter, like all those.
Everybody you just named. Really? Yes.
Is it a Facebook group somewhere that y'all have? No.
I'm friends with Madeline on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. We are friends with Madeline on Facebook.
Twitter. She'd be going in.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, we still talk. Yeah. Yeah, man.
Is there ever talk on the, I was gonna say, just on the strength of what you just said, is there ever talk of like a full out reunion on BET with y'all, everybody?
No,
okay, never mind.
No.
That was a very quick no there, no, Donna.
TV1? So.
No.
Are you?
Okay. Right. You know, for me, when it was done, it was done. And that's the way I am.
And when did it end? When did Video Soul officially end?
That's 2000... a great question. No, it was
Nine.
Before.
Yeah. Oh,
no.
Planet Groove was when.
It was
like
1997, I think. I know, because they brought me back to do a special Millennium show of the top videos of the century.
Okay.
And so I came back for that. But for the last 2 years that I did the show, I'm telling you, man, it was on New York Avenue. And every night I would drive up New York Avenue, and all I could think was that, God, 40 minutes more, and you could be at the Bay having dinner with Pam. Aww. That's all I thought about every night. And that told me that it was time. Yeah, that it was time. I didn't want to do it anymore. You know, and it just changed for me, I think, because before we used to do it in the afternoon at 1 o'clock. And sometimes for a number of years we did it at 3, but always live. And then we started recording it at 7 o'clock at night. And, you know, with me doing my morning radio show, it's just too much. It didn't feel the same to me. I don't know. And it was 14 years, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was done. Mm-hmm. It was, the people always go, man, God, don't you miss it? You know, I don't. I mean, well, I miss the people. The show was fun. But I always think about those last 2 years, man, where it's just like, no, it was time. Everything has its time. You know, that's the way I feel, man. And we had our run, and it was cool. It was great. It served its purpose for that moment, and we're done with it.
But you did miss TV because you came back with Donnie After Dark a little bit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I decided I wanted to. That was Pam's fault, really.
She wanted you out of the house.
Pam just sitting there by the house.
Get out of the house, please.
She's so used to it. All of DC knows it's Pam.
Quest, let me tell you how she put it, though. She says, Donnie, everywhere we go, all you hear is how much they love you and want you to do something else. You know, God has given you a talent that you should be sharing with people. That's the way she put it.
She right.
What I heard was, get out. It's been 5.5 years. I want you out of the house.
Take all those records out here.
Because yeah. I didn't do anything for 5.5 years, man.
What was that like? Boredom. Was that going from just going to having years to chill?
It was cool, man. It was great. I tell everybody I started a shuttle service. I would shuttle grandbabies back and forth. And I was good at it. And in the summer, I became a pool boy. You know? Yeah. Wow. For my grandkids, man. So I loved it, man. But I'm happy to be back in the game. You know, it's, I love music in particular. And, I felt like it was 5.5 years of me not knowing what was going on, you know, and I'd never experienced that before. I'd never been out of loop since the time I was 12, you know, I always knew what was happening, you know, so it's been cool, man. And then the love the people give you too, man, you know, it's just, it was almost like me and Ray Leonard had this conversation because we were he took off for 5 years before he came back and fought Hagler. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how it was so much more intense when you came back because, you know, people, you know, they're used to you and then you're gone for this. And you figured that's it. There's no more. And then all of a sudden you come back and it's a different level of appreciation, you know. And, people treat me swell.
But Donnie, when did you realize that you probably could never do radio anywhere else but the DMV? Like, the DMV might not let you. Was there a moment where you realized that you can't, or that you just wouldn't?
Dog, you painting them as straight up gangsters, no, ain't you?
For real.
Now you can't.
No, you ain't leaving him.
Right. Like you on Ben's Chili Bowl wall now. Like you can't leave.
Yeah, no.
You are
not
the official
like
mayor.
You and Marion Barry, like y'all are like DC staples, dude.
No, I never felt like that. Like they wouldn't let you leave. I mean, you know, I mean, because I was always.
So you love DC
across the country anyway.
You love it?
Oh, I absolutely love DC without doubt.
Because I'm certain that at one point you could write your own ticket and let me see what's up in Chicago to LA or.
But for what? I mean, you know, I mean.
All right, you love DC.
Yeah, and I love Detroit. I mean, Detroit's that's you know.
Okay.
That's home, baby. But you know, I mean, I've been in Chicago. BET Video Soul put me in every city in this country.
Right.
I don't need radio to do that.
Okay.
So I've never felt the need to leave to go do, you know. That's another reason why I've never felt pressured to do syndication.
I was going to ask if
BET put me in more homes than syndication could ever put me in from radio. You know, that could never be matched with radio, what BET did for me. Sure. So that's not that big a deal to me, you know. And when I've had those conversations and I go, well, I play some of everything, you know. Well, so what happens on this station in Detroit that plays Kim all the time? What happens when I play Drake or Tupac or whatever, whatever it is, I might. Well, you can play them, but, you know, and you can talk about them, but we'll cover the Tupac song with Luther.
No,
you won't. No, because, you know, for me, it's not like I'm not a bit driven show. You know, I play music. We talk about it. And, you know, that's what I do. So music is such a big part of what I do. You can't cover. It's got to be like a listen line. I mean, you know, you got to listen to the same thing in Chicago and San Francisco that they're listening to in D.C. You can't cover my music with something else.
Right.
You know, that's the biggest part of the experience to me.
And sometimes it's good to be local, you know. Sometimes
I'm telling you, man.
This is one of those cases where to be local is to be better. And, you know.
I'm old school in that way. I like that. But again, I'm very blessed in that TV gave me that thing that most people in radio are seeking through syndication. I had it in TV already.
Cool. One question I have for you was in regards to the culture of BET.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about the early years and you were saying that it wasn't pretty, you know what I'm saying? It was, I remember those early years, and I remember it was kind of rough, but it was also really real. And I mean, just from watching your show, and I remember there was this other show, I think you used to come on after Video Soul, it was a movie show, and it was this lady had a segment called Popcorn and Pig Feet.
What?
Yes. But in this particular episode was notable because they dissed Graffiti Bridge. straight up smash Graffiti Bridge. And I was like, there was that segment. There was another segment where, like, Dwayne Martin was going through the record store, like, holding up records, like, on some, like, Kiss of the Diss It kind of shit. Like, yo, this new Tony album is crazy. Yo, this is the new Tisha Campbell album. This shit is whack. Like, I mean, they were just, it was ruthless. You know what I mean? And even, like, on your show, like, I mean, you would give, like, I mean, God, man, was it like Vertical Hole? I think that was the first place. Seems Too Much Too Busy.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I remember that interview, too. Yeah, like Angie Stone had a cold.
Yes, I remember that.
Wow.
So, like, God, y'all remember so much. So real, and it was no PC, no cut card. It just seemed to be, I mean, as much as you described those early years as they were kind of rough and kind of ugly, to me, that was the charm because I knew I was getting just uncut blackness.
Yeah.
When did that change? Or do you remember when it kind of shifted and they were like, all right, maybe we got to polish it up. Like, we can't just, you know, be dissing people. Like,
can't play Rough Side of the Mountain commercial.
No, I don't. I don't know.
Can't play the what?
The Rough Side of the Mountain commercial every half hour.
Damn it!
Oh, yeah.
The Rough
Side of the Mountain
commercial. Coming up, Jesus.
Coming up. On the rough side of the mountain.
Yeah, but no, I don't know when that changed, man. I don't know. You know, I've always felt like you got to keep it real. Like, there are times when I'll play a song to this day, and I'll go, you know, wow. My boys will kill me. But I'm going to say it anyway. Cool in the Gang, Celebration.
Okay. You know, oh, you're a doppelganger.
I played that.
Yo, right, dumb. Yes.
I you started talking about that song on the air. It's like, God, I can't take that song anymore. I said, I'm happy for Cool in the Gang that this, every bar mitzvah, right, wedding, any celebration you got over the last 35 years, they played that song. I said, but hey, I go,
including Steve's. At mine and his.
But when I go down to Jamaica and I hear, it's a celebration. It's like, oh, wow.
You can't escape it.
There's no escaping it. You know, give me some of the other cooler stuff. But, you know, I think that people appreciate that because it's real. And that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, if everything is great, then you can no longer be believable because everything's not great. You know, yeah, you should sometimes say, yeah, you know, that song's not for me, but I play it. It's popular. People
That's
like
crazy.
It. You know.
Well, Donnie, we thank you for coming on the show, and this has definitely been a masterclass in it.
Man, thank you. Yo, thanks for having me.
I have one final question. This is from my mother, who, like, absolutely loves you. She wants to know, I guess what I want to know, did you ever smoke before you went on the air?
No,
my
man.
My mother swore, but now she's like, he hot.
No, man, said, definitely not. I always waited till after the show. People used to ask me that all the time. At one show, I actually came out, I addressed that. I said, people always ask me that. And but no, I am not high. I said, when I smile, I squint.
Yeah.
My eyes close. They would try all kind of makeup and stuff, trying to get my eyes to look more open. And it's just, that's just who I am. So I explained all that on the air, and I said, so anyway, so no, I do not get high. But anyway, let's get our show started. We're gonna play this video, and I'm gonna go in the back and smoke a joint. We'll be back in a minute.
Oh, God.
So.
Well, I thank you, Donnie Simpson, for all that you've done for us and, you know, raising up. I don't want to put it like, oh.
He raised, not an exaggeration. He pretty much raised, like, any left of center, like, black stuff you got put on, like, it came through Video Soul. Like,
yes.
Wow. Thank you, brother.
Well,
hey, man.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you. One more time, man, for Donnie
Simpson.
Thank
you. Thank y'all.
On behalf
it's
of
It's an
Bahia,
honor to be here.
On behalf of my ear, Sugar Steve, Boss Bill, and Big Bill Fontigolo, this is Questlove. You've been listening to Questlove Supreme, only on Pandora. We will see you on the next go-round. Thank you. Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.